Hello there and welcome. Today is Thursday, April the 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, tensions high as the U.S. and Russia disagree on solutions for Syria.
We may be at an all-time low in terms of relationship with Russia.
President Trump also changing his tune on NATO. The public relations nightmare continues for United Airlines after the forced removal of a passenger.
If you have a passenger's face bloodied appearing on social media, you are not at all equivocal.
Also ahead, entertainment news on David Letterman, Brad Pitt, and Caitlyn Jenner. It's all on today's International Edition. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson met in Moscow for hours on Wednesday with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and later with President Vladimir Putin. Tillerson's trip to Moscow represented the highest level contact between the U.S. and Russia since Trump took office in January. In a news conference following the meetings, Tillerson said the situation with Syria and last week's chemical weapons attack was discussed extensively, but it would appear that Russia doesn't agree with U.S. intelligence that Syria's government was responsible.
The perspective from the United States, supported by the facts that we have, are conclusive that the recent chemical weapons attack carried out in Syria was planned and it was directed and executed by Syrian regime forces. And we're quite confident of that.
But the U.S. and Russia have agreed to call for an international investigation of the deadly chemical weapons attack in Syria last week that prompted President Trump to launch a missile strike against the regime of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad.
Well, we did discuss at length the future role for Assad, whether it be in a future political process or not. Clearly, our view is that the reign of the Assad family is coming to an end. And they have, again, brought this on themselves with their conduct of the war these past few years. We discussed our view that Russia, as their closest ally in the conflict, perhaps has the best means of helping Assad recognize this reality.
Well, the world's two biggest nuclear powers are at odds over multiple issues, including the U.S. intelligence community's declaration that hackers, acting on orders from the Kremlin, interfered in last year's presidential election. Joining me now to dig deeper into Tillerson's visit is Manhattan College Professor of International Relations, Pamela Chasek. Thank you so much for being with us. So the visit certainly seems to come at an interesting moment.
I think the original purpose of the meeting goes back to what the president was saying during the campaign, but then reality has hit this administration in a big way, and the whole tone of the meeting ended up being very, very different than I think what they had planned. I think the administration is going through quite a major foreign policy attitude adjustment right now as some of the realities have finally started to hit them.
Something that struck me was Russia's foreign minister in his press conference with Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said that his government has had a lot of questions about the ambiguous and contradictory ideas coming from the new administration. What do you make of that?
Nothing that has come out of the current administration has been particularly clear, and I think that goes towards both the naivete and the lack of experience that many of the people in the White House currently have. And I think it also goes to show to this much sort of rumored debate going on within the West Wing of the White House in terms of direction. This is the first time in our history that we have had somebody elected to president who held no former elected office and had not served in the military. Coming with such a lack of experience and then not surrounding himself with people with Washington experience, it's showing in the mixed messages that are coming out of Washington right now. I recognize that he wanted to shake things up and that his constituents and those who voted for him were looking for him to quote-unquote drain the swamp. But at the same time, I think they're starting to realize that that's much easier said on the campaign trail than it is once you're in the White House.
So there's definitely a standoff when it comes to Syria as far as both countries' views on what's been taking place. Russia's definitely not backing off from its support of President Bashar al-Assad. And it's saying it's not at all convinced that the leader of that country, that Syria's government, was responsible for the chemical attack.
Nor will they. Russia needs Syria. One of the issues, and this also happened today with the signing the agreement to let Montenegro join NATO, the issue in Ukraine, that, and this also is similar to the China-North Korea issue, is that these countries need a buffer zone, just like we need a buffer zone, that for arguments at home in Russia to show that Russia is still a big player on the world stage, it's very important for Russia to maintain its allies, to maintain the show of force that they have, not to appear to be weak. This was one of, you know, Putin's major strategies, is that to regain the strength that the former Soviet Union had in terms of today's Russia. In the Middle East, there's very few places, in fact, that Russia still has a toehold, and one of them is Syria, where it does have a big military base. Supporting al-Assad maintains that hold in the Middle East, the only one that is left. At one point in history, there was a lot more influence of the then Soviet Union in the Middle East. And you see the same thing with some of the other border countries between Europe and Russia. And it's a similar thing that you see with China and North Korea, where countries need these buffer zones between the proverbial East and West. And so there's no way Putin is going to back down without a fight, because he will then show weakness. And right now he wants to show strength. That's one of the reasons he kept Secretary of State Tillerson waiting for 2 hours, is that's a show of strength, that he has the upper hand. I saw somebody said that this is very much kabuki theater, and indeed it is. You know, they're dancing around each other, trying to each show position and each show strength.
That's Manhattan College Professor of International Relations Pamela Chasick. Well, U.S. President Donald Trump on Wednesday declared the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO, no longer obsolete. That's 3 months after he said the alliance had outlived its usefulness because it hadn't defended against terrorist attacks. Hosting NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg at the White House Wednesday, the president expressed a commitment to the organization.
In the coming months and years, I'll work closely with all of our NATO allies to enhance this partnership and to adapt to the challenges of the future, of which there will be many.
Trump also reiterated his complaints made during German Chancellor Angela Merkel's recent visit about other NATO countries not paying their fair share for defense.
The Secretary General and I agree that other member nations must satisfy their responsibility to contribute 2% of GDP to defense. If other countries pay their fair share instead of relying on the United States to make up the difference, we will all be much more secure.
Stoltenberg said the two did have a very productive discussion.
So a strong NATO is good for Europe, but the strong NATO is also good for the United States. And therefore, I welcome the very strong commitment of the United States to the security of Europe.
Russia, the former Soviet Union, and the reason the West compelled to create NATO in 1949 was also discussed by Trump and Stoltenberg. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Scientists tout possible cure for HIV infection. North Korea will test the strength of U.S.-China ties. U.S., Canada, and Mexico announce a joint bid to host the 2016 World Cup. And undocumented U.S. students are living in limbo. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. United Airlines saw its stock price this week sink after a viral video showing a passenger being dragged off a flight sparked outrage worldwide. One airline analyst said He's never seen such a parade of incompetence and says the company offered an inadequate apology for mistreating a paying customer. VOA's Jim Randall reports a more contrite apology came late Tuesday.
"We put the hospital in hospitality, just one of many jabs in a storm of ridicule that erupted on Twitter, YouTube, and television comedy programs. On Chinese social media, some customers said they too had bad experiences with United. More criticism in a sarcastic blend of the carrier's Friendly Skies slogan and video of a martial arts movie star throwing punches. And an obviously fake picture of grim-looking police officers pasted on top of a picture of United customer service. Also, a United Airlines commercial parodied on television with the threatening tone of an old gangster movie. This cell phone video shows a passenger struggling with police. United officials wrote the passenger had defied security officers. An airline analyst says United should have avoided the problem by offering more money to induce more people to leave voluntarily. Richard Abulafia says the airline stock was hurt because it mishandled the incident and bungled the apology. He spoke via Skype.
Say that if you have a passenger's face bloodied appearing on social media, you are not at all equivocal about how you handle the apology, and they were somewhat equivocal.
A stronger apology came late Tuesday when United CEO Oscar Munoz called the incident truly horrific and vowed to fix the airline so such things never happen again. The passenger in this case appeared to be Asian, and some critics on social media accused the airline of bigotry. Abulafia says the allegations could seriously hurt United in the large, growing, and vital Chinese market.
I can't imagine it's a true allegation, but that really doesn't matter at all. A mob of people on the internet are going to see what they want to see.
Analyst Jeremy Stretch says the tough economics of the airline business prompt companies to book more passengers than seats.
All airlines will routinely try and overbook their airlines because they know or they assume there will normally be a number of people who will book and not turn up. So maintaining load factors is very important in terms of maintaining profitability in a sector where margins are incredibly thin.
White House spokesman Sean Spicer called the incident unfortunate.
It is troubling to see how that was handled.
Spicer says the airline and local officials are reviewing the matter and does not expect federal officials to start a separate investigation. Jim Randall, VOA News, Washington.
Well, the situation with United Airlines is clearly a public relations nightmare, in no small part to the age of Facebook and Twitter. Joining me now for more on the social media impact, VOA's Andrew Palcheski. Andrew, this story is definitely not going away.
Not at all. The fallout still continuing on social media after that video went viral of the passenger being literally dragged off the plane. And it's not just making waves in the U.S., it's making waves around the world, particularly in China. Now, the gentleman who was dragged off the plane, Dr. David Dow, is a Vietnamese-American, but a lot of Chinese social media users are taking offense to the fact that he was pulled off the plane, saying that they thought it was a racist or racially motivated move. So you have on Weibo, China's largest social media network, different trending topics. One I saw was hashtag United Airlines forces passenger off plane, which is kind of a mouthful for a hashtag. But the one that I'm seeing that's a bit shorter, more pithy, and perhaps more worrisome for United is hashtag boycott United.
Oh, yeah.
You have a number of people on Weibo who said they're not going to fly United anymore, which is a big deal for United. Because they are the largest U.S. carrier flying to China, nearly 100 flights going there every week. So big business at stake for United as a result of this.
Yeah, this is somewhat of a public relations nightmare, and really you've got to attribute, once again, social media.
Yeah, as I talked about earlier with our colleague Phil Alexio, social media really exacerbates these problems. Things that maybe would have gone by the wayside, been through a couple news cycles, and that was it. Now people are talking about weeks later, and even years later, it keeps getting brought up. Now, there's an interesting wrinkle to the story on social media. A number of people on Twitter said that their anti-United tweets, or tweets making fun of United pulling this man off this plane, have been deleted, and they're claiming that Twitter is censoring their tweets.
Really?
Yeah. So It's not clear exactly what's going on here. Doesn't seem to be objectionable content that's being deleted. It's not spam, so it wouldn't violate either of those policies in Twitter's terms of service. But it could have broken Twitter's rules about abusive language. Now, the people who are tweeting these things have come out and said, well, we didn't say anything abusive. We didn't say anything that was malicious. We just used the @United Twitter handle and tweeted at them. That might be the issue. That might be why Twitter is removing these, and that is not part of the terms of service. So that would be pretty troubling for Twitter users to see that kind of censorship go on.
No kidding.
For Twitter's part, they have not released any statement yet owning up to this or explaining this.
Why would they get involved in deleting for United?
That's a good question. There may be business interests there, something that's they're going to have to explain what exactly they're doing. If they do think that it's abusive language, they're going to have to justify that and explain what's going on. And to be fair, the people who are claiming that their tweets have been deleted, they may have said some abusive things towards United that may have violated Twitter's policies. It could be coming from either side. But until Twitter releases any kind of statement or explains themselves, the speculation is going to continue, and so is the anger from Twitter users.
All right, Andrew, we appreciate it. You can follow him on Twitter @APAL. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at @VOA_IE. You're listening to International Edition.
I'm Victor Beatty. Since 1942, the Voice of America has been a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news. Today, VOA remains committed to providing an accurate, objective, and comprehensive news product at the top of every hour, every day. We can be heard on your local affiliate or streamed on the web at voanews.com.
I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Taking a look at the lighter side of news, we are joined now by Rare.us content editor Nicole Moschella, who has some entertainment news. And now, you know, she's always been known as Dave's mom, Nicole. We hear former CBS Late Show host David Letterman's mother, unfortunately, has passed away.
Dorothy Menangering, she's David Letterman's mom, of course. She did pass away on Tuesday at the age of 95. She was very beloved, and people knew her because she had this beautiful Midwestern charm, which was such a contrast to her son's kind of sarcastic wit. And she had released a 1996 cookbook, Home Cooking with Dave's Mom. That's what she was known as, Dave's Mom, on the Late Show. So she will be very missed, and I'm sure he hasn't said anything that I've heard of yet, but I'm sure he's missing her today as well.
No doubt. And then we've got Caitlyn Jenner coming out with a tell-all book. Apparently you've got a sneak peek, and there are some juicy tidbits coming out of that.
Yeah, so she is releasing her book on April 25th. It's called The Secrets of My Life. And in that book, she writes that she believes Robert Kardashian one time insinuated that he knew O.J. Simpson killed Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman. Caitlin writes that after the first trial, she at the time was Bruce Jenner, of course, she and Robert were riding in the car together, and Robert Kardashian said, I would have been okay if they had gotten him during the first trial, kind of insinuating that he knew something maybe he didn't want the public to know, and he defended O.J. Simpson anyway. And Caitlin wrote that she believes part of the reason why Robert Kardashian wanted to be on the trial was because he was really upset about his divorce from Kris Jenner. At the time, Caitlin was married to Robert Kardashian's ex-wife, Kris Jenner, and thought that maybe defending O.J. Simpson would upset her because she was such great friends with Nicole Brown Simpson. It's going to be a juicy book coming out pretty soon here. We should all be on the lookout for that.
For sure. And then, this is just plain Hollywood gossip. We know Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie are no longer together, and you've got some news that he may be starting to flirt a bit.
Yeah, seems he might be getting back in the dating game. His production company, Plan B Productions, is coming out with the film The Lost City of Z, which stars Sienna Miller. And apparently, at a private dinner of 25 people, he was caught flirting with Miss Sienna Miller and talking to her all night, and they looked very comfortable together. Witnesses say that they were heavily enjoying each other's company. Of course, Sienna Miller's people kept mum on the details and didn't really get into any possible flirting, and they said that she was speaking to other people at the party as well. And actually, in 2015, I guess these rumors popped up that they had been flirting while on the set of the film, and he was still married to Angelina at the time. And Sienna Miller said in an interview in 2015 that she had only met Brad Pitt twice. He really didn't come to set that much. So I guess we'll see. Maybe they're Hollywood's new hot couple. Maybe they're not.
That's true. Very true. Verre.us content editor Nicole Michella, thanks as always.
This is Science in a Minute.
A team of astronomers discovered another great spot on Jupiter that rivals the size of the giant planet's iconic Great Red Spot. The Great Red Spot is actually an ongoing high-pressure storm raging in its atmosphere with winds that can reach speeds of 430 to 680 kilometers per hour. The new discovery is called the Great Cold Spot because scientists think it's about 200 Kelvin cooler than the surrounding atmosphere, which they say can vary between 426 and 726 degrees Celsius. The researchers say the Great Cold Spot was created by the effects of the giant planet's magnetic field. Compared to the slowly changing Great Red Spot, the researchers say the Great Cold Spot is much more unstable and can dramatically change size and shape in only a few days or weeks. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues now. Well, country musicians Dan and Shay are touring to support their album Obsessed, and their song I Pray For You is featured in the movie The Shack, starring Oscar nominee Octavia Spencer. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, the duo deals with life on the road and supports a cause that they both care about, animal rescue. I pray you
Shay met at a party in Nashville and started writing songs together the next day. Their 2013 single, 19 You and Me, was a breakout hit, reaching number 7 on the U.S. country charts. Their new single, I Pray For You, is featured in the soundtrack to the movie The Shack, starring Octavia Spencer. Dan Smyers says the song holds special meaning for his partner Shay Mooney after the birth of his first child in January with his fiancée, Hannah Billingsley.
The timing of it couldn't have been better. The video and the song came out, I think, like 2 days apart from when Shay had his kids. So it's a special song, and it's one of those ones that we get emotional on stage singing, and I think it's going to be a big part in our career.
The duo is currently touring in support of their second album, Obsessed. Shay Mooney says being away from his new family is tough, but his fiancée does most of the work at this stage anyway.
You have a kid and you're gone completely and you feel helpless. But honestly, in these first few months as a dad, you're kind of helpless anyway because the mom, and she's like doing everything, you know, nursing and all these things. And sometimes I'm at the house and I'm like, I don't even know. I have nothing. I don't know what to do. I can't help. I don't know how to take care of this kid. But no, it's been so much fun, you know, being able to learn that. No one can tell you how that's going to go until you actually have a kid. But it's been like the greatest adventure that I've ever been on.
Dan and Shay's second single from their sophomore album, How Not To, is currently 13th on the Billboard Country Airplay charts. The duo's success allows them to help with an animal rescue shelter in Nashville. Dan Smyers says using their fame and their newfound wealth to help animals is something they believe in deeply.
we've raised money, we've raised awareness. We shot a video for our first number one song, Nothing Like You. We had 43 rescue dogs in it, and all 43 of them got adopted from that video. So it's really close to our hearts, and to be able to do something and make a difference in this world with our music is really special to us. And I mean, what girl doesn't like puppies and, you know, whatever. So it's perfect. You know, it works out. It overlaps with our music, and yeah, it's a really cool thing we do.
Dan and Shay are scheduled to continue their current tour until October, including several festivals and dates with Thomas Rhett on his home team tour. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondence, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, John Ellison. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Department of State recently honored 13 women from around the world for their exceptional courage and leadership in promoting justice in their communities. First Lady Melania Trump and Undersecretary of State Thomas Shannon presented the 2017 International Women of Courage Awards. Mrs. Trump praised the recipients.
These are the stories of human greatness that will continue to inspire and therefore must be told far and wide. These honorees who have fought on the front lines against injustice are true heroes.
Four of the 13 awardees were nominated by U.S. embassies located in the Middle East and Europe. These women are truly leading the charge to fight for those that cannot fight for themselves, said Mrs. Trump.
Together, we must declare that the era of allowing their brutality against women and children is over, while affirming that the time for empowering women around the world is now.
Nominated by the U.S. Embassy to the Holy See, Sister Caroline Tahan Fakah is a Roman Catholic nun working at a nursery school in Damascus. Putting her own life at risk, Sister Caroline has become a beacon of hope to both Muslims and Christians. She helps refugees, internally displaced people, and children. Fadia Tabat has risked her life to counter violent extremism in Yemen. Through her work, she dissuaded young boys from joining Al-Qaeda, exposed its Yemeni branch, Ansar al-Sharia, as a recruiter of child soldiers, and documented for the United Nations cases of abduction, rape, and other human rights violations by various armed groups. After leaving an abusive situation, Jannat al-Ghazi's life was threatened by her family because they believed she had dishonored them by sharing her story publicly. She now has helped break the culture of silence around domestic violence. As director of the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq, Jannat has provided shelter, training, protection, and legal services to over 500 survivors of gender-based violence. Former Turkish schoolteacher Sadat Uvkan exposed a decades-long pattern of sexual abuse of children in her school. As a result of her efforts, she forced a criminal investigation of the principal despite tremendous pressure to drop the case. Their lives, said Mrs. Trump, remind us of the boundless capacity of the human spirit when guided by moral clarity and the desire to do good.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage.
at www.voanews.com/editorials.
It's 4.